Now back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Good morning!
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back. 9:01 is the time here in the Family Leisure Studios on this Monday morning, April the 27th, 2026. The month of May is just around the corner. Time continues to fly by. Family Leisure, that's where family and fun come together. With their hot tub and swim spot expo going on right now over at 2120 Witten Road. Go check them out at Family Leisure. The weather today, again, going to be some sunshine, a few clouds out there as well, and we could see some thunderstorms popping up this afternoon. This time of year, you kind of always get that chance of some rain, but or some thunderstorms popping up. Currently 73 degrees, highs expected to be in the low to mid 80s today. Tonight, again, a possibility of some thunderstorms. Really, over the next couple of days, some chances of some storms. And then later in the week, much cooler with high Friday of only 60 degrees projected right now. It's Monday. It's 9 o'clock. It's time to talk some Memphis baseball.
It's time to talk University of Memphis baseball with Tigers head coach Matt Reiser. Brought to you by Landers Nissan and Landers Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in South Haven. If it doesn't say Landers, you pay too much. Here's Coach Reiser with Greg and Eli.
It is Coach Reiser joining us as he does each and every Monday. Brought to you by the great folks at Landers. And I'll tell you what, Coach, down at Birmingham, one of the teams at the top of the conference against UAB, you lose 2 out of 3, frustrating loss Friday night, great bounce back Saturday, and then things on Sunday kind of got a little bit away from you. Started the week with the trip down to Starkville to take on Mississippi State, who we know how good they are. A 6-2 loss down there, certainly a very respectable performance down there. But just kind of overall, how would you assess the week for your team?
Yeah, you know, Eli, as always, man, appreciate you guys having me on. And Greg, we'll get you soon, baby. We'll see you again soon here. I thought overall, like, you know, you look at process, and that's what you want to be driven by, right? I know wins are important for sure, but you look at how we've been playing the last few weeks and obviously the challenging schedule we played this week, starting with Mississippi State, who ended up sweeping LSU this weekend. In a tight game, I thought we started off the week right. You know, I thought we pitched it well. We came out with some hits early and also got silenced a little bit there as the game went along, had our opportunities to take a lead late, and then they threw a late punch in the eighth inning, you know, to take that win there, 6-2 on us. So, but overall, I thought that got us ready for the week, right? We talked about all these midweek games of getting ready for the weekend, the most important part of it. And thought we played well this weekend. And in all honesty, when you all look at it holistically, I know, again, it comes down to the wins, but I thought we outplayed our opponent. Unfortunately, hey, man, this is one of those seasons that UAB's having that they can do no wrong type of deal, right? There's a reason they're sitting in first place. They are a good club, man. They've done a really good job with that offense. It's a very disciplined offense. They can hit you in a multitude of ways. They can steal bags. They can hit doubles. They can hit home runs, which we saw there also on Friday night and on Sunday. Just a very complete offense, 1-9. There's not really a hole in the lineup. And then, you know, arm-wise, they've got some really good arms. And so there's a reason they're sitting in first place. You know, Friday night was the heavyweight fight. You go toe-to-toe. You score the run there in the extra innings. Feel like you got the chance to win the game. And we talked it off air. You know, there's a couple pitches here that, you know, hey man, felt like were good pitches and they got good swings, and that's what good teams do. So for us to be able to bounce back on Saturday, put ourselves back into obviously into a rubber match for Sunday, really proud of the guys. I thought we handled the week well, and I think that's why we're having more success and playing better baseball. We're handling moments a lot better than what we were earlier in the season. And the schedule's been challenging. You know, we've been in a situation where this is the most challenging schedule overall that I've ever played in my entire career. You know, I remember being at Southeastern one year, we played the number 7 or number 6 non-conference schedule, but overall I think our schedule ended up being in the 60s when it was all said and done, 300 some teams. Right now we're in the 20s, and so, you know, again, this is what I think's prepared us to play this. You know, we talked yesterday after the game on Sunday, I know it got away from us there late on Sunday to lose the rubber match, but, you know, Coach Dunn and I had some conversations after. He goes, hey, man, we played pretty much everybody in this league. We played East Carolina. You know, we got UTSA still left to play, but, you know, hey, man, you guys are one of the best teams in this league by far. Like, you can tell just the way you guys are playing and the conference you're playing with. And I said, yeah, man, I agree. So he goes, man, hey, y'all, you know, we'll see you in Clearwater in a couple of weeks. And obviously that's the ultimate goal, right? We've talked about that since day one. Our goal was to obtain and solidify a bid down to Clearwater. We're doing a good job of trajecting that way, but we got to continue to take care of business this week.
You mentioned on the Friday night game, it's in a couple of, like you said, you get into extra innings, you score the run top of the 11th. They get two in the bottom 11th, walk it off against you. You had some opportunities with the bases loaded in the 8th and the 10th, weren't able to get that key hit. So, like, you're so close. You said you played well. It's so close, and then it's kind of snatched away from you. So, like, after a game like that, how what is kind of the takeaway? How do you come away from that? What are you trying to tell the team?
Yeah, you know, I told the guys, I said, you know, every great team or every team that I've had that has accomplished something, right, in a season has had a loss that they can circle and go, hey, man, if we do that right there, this is where we talk about process-driven result. Not driven. Hey, man, we did everything process right. Yeah, we could have done one or two things better to win the game, absolutely. But the way we competed, the way we handled the adversity, the way we continued to respond to certain situations, right, just really proud of how we did that. So if we continue to do that, we're going to be just fine. We're going to put ourselves in the position we want to be in Clearwater and have a chance to go win down there. But we've got to stay driven just like that with that process. And so, obviously, they did that. They took it to heart, and we come out on Saturday against a really good arm that has thrown really well all year for UAB, and we put up, I think, 3 in the first. Or five, maybe in the first couple innings, and do a good job getting their bullpen, and then also exposing that part of it, right? You know, we know that the starting pitching and their closer, what they used the night before, both guys have kind of used the bullpen the night before. That if we could jump on the starter, we could obviously execute some things and score some runs there. So it was good to see that response to it. But that's the message. Hey, man, stick to that process, and everything holistically will work out the way it's supposed to.
And that's the thing too. On Saturdays, you mentioned you come out, you score 3 in the first, and it looks like you're, but then. They come back, and they take a 6-5 lead, and it could have been easy to say, like, oh, gosh, here we go again. Like, are they going to snatch another one away from us?
Yeah.
And then you get 4 in the 7th, 2 in the 8th, 2 in the 9th, end up winning 13-9. So, again, just within that game, the response.
Yeah, 100%. And I think you hit the nail on the head, and that's where we feel, like, really good about our club right now, right? Like, if we respond that way after a tough night on Friday, after we got off to a good start and not going, hey, man, oh, man, here we go again. Again, you're I want to say fight with fate, but you fight with fate a little bit with UAB, right? I mean, again, they're having having the season of seasons, right, they haven't had in probably 20 years. And when you're fighting that destiny or whatever you want to call it, fate that they're having, hey, man, to see us with the outcome of getting a win and seeing that resilience, that's huge for us. And I think for our conference moving forward to whoever we play, right, East Carolina, UTSA, Charlotte's the last 3 weekends, put ourselves in a good position to do what we want to do.
Also in that Saturday game, 5 more stolen bases for you guys. Yeah. I think you're up to 96, I believe, is on the year now. Freddie Rodriguez, up to 34 stolen bases now. The school record is 39, so he looks like he's very much on his way to getting to that. You've got Javon Hernandez, who's 20-for-20 in stolen bases this year. You continue to use that as a weapon, and you got some guys who are having some great success doing it.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and what we could do with some other guys, if they were healthy, I think we'd have another dynamic to our offense, but also we're trying to find ways to continue to muster things. I think the guys like James Smith, right, Trey Cassidy, you know, those guys have been kind of beat up on the lower half stuff that could continue to put pressure. But, you know, the good thing I think we're seeing too now is it's not – we're not dependent on one guy to do it. We have a multitude of guys of doing it. Also, we talk about, you know, Freddie because he's in the lead, but then you look at Javon also, and he's got 20. Like, oh, man. And then all of a sudden you look up, and Gupton's got double digit, right? And so I think the same thing for our offense of swinging the bat as well, not only stealing bases, but, you know, who's going to be the next guy to come up with a big hit? You know, sometimes it might be Jimmy. Sometimes it might be Shane Cox had the home run on Saturday for us, right? And all of a sudden you look up, Freddie Rodriguez goes off the gap. So I think the collectiveness of us all kind of finding different ways, you know, hey, man, maybe one day, you know, I look – Tyler Harrington on Friday night had a bad night, but then Saturday and Sunday had a couple hits and a couple walks. Like, that's what it's got to look like. That, hey, man, not everybody's going to have their A game every day, but, I mean, find a way to be productive, pass the baton down the line, and have a different guy step up every day. And I think that's what we're doing more of collectively.
How much, when we talk about stolen bases, because it seems like throughout the levels of baseball, especially at the major league level, now it's starting to come back a little bit, but there for a while there was like nothing. And but mostly analytics tell everybody, hey, wait till the home runs. Like, just wait till somebody hits a home run. Right. So how much is elsewhere around the conference are teams stealing bases?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in first place, but UAB, I think, was sitting in second behind us, and so we got to see a little bit of it. And I think that's the other part of this, too, that we haven't really reflected on a whole lot, is our pitch staff's done such a much better job of holding runners and doing a good job to mix up our looks. Early, man, we were getting run on like a track meet. Like, we were track meeting one side, but they were track meeting us on the other side, right? I mean, it was just two elite runners. And so, you know, I think we've done a much better job pitching-wise, and I think that's why we've we've helped ourselves and pitched a little bit better too as well. We've controlled some things. So, you know, I think it is still a part of the game. You know, at the major league level, like you talked about, it was pretty much non-existent there for a little while. Now with the change in the rules, you only pick so many times and all that kind of stuff. Kind of put yourself in some better positions, right, with elite throwers behind the plate. But again, you know, we're in a world of velocity, right? You know, guys chase velocity and want to throw harder. Sometimes that takes to gather a little bit more and take a little bit longer to get to the plate. So again, it's about finding 90s, you know, however we can find those. If it's with the three passes of HBP or a walk or stolen base, you know, a Freddy Rodriguez who might not have the power to hit 10 home runs, that's fine. No worries. Hey man, hit your 15 doubles. And then if you're stealing 34 bags, now you got like, you know, 40 doubles, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it's just doing a good job of collectively finding our 90s. Just know who you are and what you are and do that to the best of your ability.
And that was part of it because one of my thought was like, how much do pitchers and catchers now even face stolen bases, or how much does it kind of weigh on them? And how much, I wonder, does that affect a pitcher when he faces a team where he knows they run a lot? He's like, I'm just not used to this, seeing this much.
100%. Well, and you can look at statistical data, right, and go, hey, man, you stole X amount of bases. But the things that you can't record, right, the missed executed pitches because he is trying to be quicker to the plate, and all of a sudden he hangs the breaking ball. Now you get a double in the gap, and the guy scores from first base. Those are the unmeasurables that you got to look at and go, hey, man, what kind of pressure are we applying before we ever show up to the ballpark? I think that's literally noted. Hey, man, we apply pressure to a lot of teams before we ever show up.
How much, when it comes to your stolen bases, how much are called stolen bases, or they're like those guys, the Hernandez, Rodriguez, like, is that just a green light? And hey, if you guys find, you got the lead, you got the pitch, do it.
Yeah. You know, we've got a system. We've got a green light system that we've put in and spend a lot of time in the fall. And we've talked about it. Like, hey, man, football's got its special teams, right? And so you always think, I think back, right, to the Frank Beamer days, the Virginia Tech special teams, the block and punts, and, you know, the special returns and all this kind of stuff. But they put time and effort into it, so therefore they were good at it. Same thing with us, right? Like, it means something to our offense. And so we put a lot of time and effort putting the system in. But to give them, you know, some individuality, right, to have their own ability to go out there and get their reads and go, hey, coach, I had it, right? And I've got guys looking at me going, hey, green light, yes or no? And I kind of look at the situation, go, not this time, right? Or other times that, hey, man, I'm putting green light on, and they don't go. I'm like, hey, man, you got green light. Let's rock and roll. Like, you got the cues. You know the P's and Q's.
I'm honking at you, back. You, get off your phone and go. The light's green.
If you want me to put it on, I can put it on. You know what I mean? So, you know, but at the end of the day, yeah, we've got a system put in place that they do a good job with. They know what they're looking for. And, hey, man, if it's given to you, take it. We talk about in the game. You know, we don't know when the opposing team's going to make a mistake, and we kind of try to treat that same thing for a base runner aspect of it. You don't know when it's going to take a little bit longer to the plate, but you need to be ready to make that read. I mean, if it takes a little bit longer to get to the plate, you get the jump, take the bag, right? If he doesn't, no big deal, shut it down. We don't have to go anywhere. So I think it's just staying ready each pitch and every pitch and stay locked in and focused with that consistency.
News also last week, Carson Fair, your closer, mid-season stopper of the year watch list, 8 saves for him. He's having a fantastic year. It's always cool to see your players get on some of these watch lists.
100%, yeah, and really proud of him. I mean, he should be. You know, he's done a great job for us in a season that has been difficult, right, to find wins, you know, and in the schedule we've played a lot of talented teams and good clubs. So even the wins we have gotten, right, we need to finish off some games. And to be able to run him out there in the ninth inning makes you feel really good about what you're doing, right? That was kind of the conundrum we got into Friday night. I mean, we run him out for the ninth and go, hey, man, stop in the ninth, right? We go back out scoring the 10th, and then we can run him back out to finish off the game in the bottom 10th. We don't score in the top of the 10th. We send somebody else out because obviously now we still got that extra inning, that extra half. And so we know our limitations there. But, you know, a thing that we've got to continue to get him in the game, not in just, you know, closing situations, but in stopper situations as well, like we did Friday night. Now, they can help us win games. So even though he might not have the save, you know, if we would have got the win there on Friday night, hey, man, he was a huge reason because he threw up the zero he did late.
I always think about that with the managers, like when you get into extra inning games or whatever, of how – obviously, if you're the home team, you know there's not going to be that save situation. But if you're the road team, like, you know there can be that save situation. So, but you got a high leverage situation here. That's not going to matter if we don't get out of it. So it's like how and when to use those guys. I always think about that, how you try and process that.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's on Friday night. It's not on Sunday.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like it's the end of the weekend. Like, okay, hey, man, this is our last bullet to throw. I mean, this is Friday night. So obviously, if you get extended too far, then you're sitting in a situation where, hey, man, you can't get him back. And I think we've done a good job of managing that, right? I go back to look to the week before with Rice, right? We brought him in, we closed him in one game on Friday night. All of a sudden, you go back like, and I know it's the rain game, but we play that one on Sunday. He goes 40-something pitches, and you go ahead and solidify the series win. Yeah. You know you're not going to have for game three, but it's okay. Hey, man, yeah. Let's get the road win series. Take the win in hand, so to speak. And I think that's what we got to continue to do. You know, moving forward, we've looked at this going, hey, man, they all count the same. Again, you know, so that's been our consistent message with our club. If we've got a win in hand, we need to go take it while we can.
Matt Reiser joining us as he does each and every Monday. It's brought to you by Landers Nissan and Landers Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram. So you just play UAB, who is one of the teams tied atop the conference at 12-6. The other two teams they are tied with, you still have remaining on your schedule, including East Carolina coming up this weekend. Then you've got UTSA. That's the third of the teams that is tied atop the conference the following weekend. Both of those you've got at home. You are in a four-way tie for fifth place.
Why not?
At 8-10. And then South Florida's at 7-11 there. I mean, this is jam-packed. And as we've talked about, only the top eight go to the conference tournament, so there is still a ton to be decided over these final three weekends.
Yeah, there's a lot. And again, you know, nine games remaining in conference play. Each one's going to have more and more magnitude as you go down the road, right, as you get closer to Clearwater and also going down there. So, again, you know, it is. It's a jam-packed league. It's a good league. Even there at the top, you got a three-way tie for first, right? There's a little bit of separation now, and you'll see that as we continue to go on right through the weeks. There'll be more and more separation that'll come up into play. So, but there's still a logjam. Again, you know, we're two games out of fourth. You know, you're one game out of ninth. And so when you look at that holistically of what that looks like, you know, again, what you want to be able to do in this, Eli, is control your own fate. And we had that, right? Two of our remaining three series are at home, right? Yeah. They are against good clubs, East Carolina and UTSA. But I'll be honest with you, Eli, there's a lot of good clubs in this league. So it's all about playing good baseball. We play good baseball, which we have the last few weeks. We'll put ourselves in the driver's seat to be able to control our own fate.
Tomorrow night, you will be at Murray State before you then, like I said, you come home. You're going to be home for a while, which is going to be nice to have two straight home weekends. But again, at Murray State and then East Carolina in this weekend for three games. From East Carolina, that's one of those baseball programs that seemingly year in and year out forever has been good. Like it's just they've just, no matter what conference they've been in, East Carolina has always been good. So what kind of challenges do they present, and also with Murray State tomorrow night?
Yeah, you know, Murray's obviously coming off their Omaha run from last year and have done a good job of responding to that. You know, you see how kind of Omaha works. Sometimes you look at the LSU, for instance, right? They're coming off a national championship and having, you know, one of the worst seasons they've ever had. And so, but now you look at Murray State to be able to compound what they did last year in Omaha to come back. I think they're in second place or tied for first there in the OVC and doing a good job, but obviously just put themselves in another position, you know, to have another championship. And so a lot of returners from that club from a year ago, offensively and on the mound. There's also a lot of new faces, right, with any turnover of a team. So, you know, they got the new ballpark. They got the turf put down, new pads, a new scoreboard, new video board, the whole ordeal. So I'll see a lot of glit and glamour that they've done a good job of handling that. And Skirk has always done a fantastic job up there. So it'll be a challenge this week to go up there, obviously play in Murray and obviously play a good club, but feel like we're in a really good position to continue to build on these midweeks for the weekend. East Carolina, like you said, I mean, they've always been the thoroughbred in the league and in whatever league they've been in, you know, whether it's the American or Conference USA. I can remember back to my days in Conference USA, it was us and them a lot of times having those conversations of who's going to win the league. So, you know, they've done a good job of managing some things. I know they've lost a couple arms through the year, but have had some guys that have stepped up for them pitching-wise, and their offense is starting to go like it did. Kind of normally does. They find a little bit more consistency in it. So they're coming off a sweep of South Florida, had a great weekend there at home and felt good about what they're doing. You know, but again, I mean, as you go into each week, it's a new week and a new plan, and it'll be another challenging week like it was last week. But if we continue to play good baseball, we'll put ourselves in good position.
All right, so who's the hitter and pitcher of the week?
You know, Eli, we've been sitting there talking. I'm sitting there looking down at the stat line the whole time trying to figure this out because I knew this question was coming and I did not prepare myself. Probably should have a little bit better, but, you know, in all honesty, I got to go with a couple guys here. You know, from a pitching side of things, you know, I thought Howell was good for us on Friday. Ran into a little jam there. I thought Case, what he was able to do, you know, he got off the bad start the first three innings, but 4, 5, and 6 gave us three big zeros. But when you look at it throughout the week, I think the man of the hour for us was Davis Oswalt, what he was able to come and do out of the bullpen. We were able to extend that lead and get it to 13-9. And so we left Davis in the game to go finish off the game. And I know that's kind of a different deal sometimes, you know, to be in that situation. Obviously, if we had a safe situation, we're going to bring in Carson Fair, the stopper of the year. But you're sitting there thinking, hey, man, if we can win the rubber match and Davis can go finish the game off, And then you get the rubber match and you get your closer back ready to rock and roll, yeah. And throw back to back days, put yourself in a really good position. So for him to be able to do this for us there on that side of it, I thought was huge for us. So he'll be my pitcher of the week. Here of the week, man, there's a few. There's a few swings that were pretty good, but you know, when I look at it holistically, I think Javon Hernandez needs that. I think he's been really hot for us the last few weeks and done a really good job of playing a little bit more his style of baseball and has gotten to that. He's had a few big swings for us and some big moments. I think of taking the lead there on Friday night, had another swing on Saturday that gave us a lead in another gridlock game. Swung the bat, hit a home run there at Mississippi State the other night to tie the ball game up. So Javon Hernandez will be my hitter of the week as well.
And again, he's 20 for 20 in stolen bases for the year. That's pretty good.
Fantastic.
That's a pretty good record. That's for sure. He is Matt Reiser, head coach of the University of Memphis baseball team. He joins us each and every Monday during the season, brought to you by Landers Nissan and Landers Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram. Coach, good luck with your trip up to Murray, Kentucky, and then it's going to be some two straight weekends here at home. Hopefully folks can get out, watch the team in action, and two big series against two really good teams.
Yeah, we're going to need that fan support, to be honest with you. We need a little home field advantage. So we got two really good clubs coming in the next two weekends, obviously in East Carolina, UTSA, both are regional clubs. So we'll need our full fan support, our Tiger Nation, to come out and come support us. And we look forward to be seeing them at the ballpark. So go Tigers, go.
Coach, thank you very much. She joins us again each and every Monday. We'll be back. Get back into some NBA playoffs and some other things when we come back here on Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Let Bryant Dacus and Brett Norsworthy take you home every afternoon. Sports Time on Sports 56. Weekdays from 3 to 6 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
56 Mornings.
Morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back here, 925 in the Family Leisure Studios. While we're on the topic of baseball, we did have a firing in the major leagues over the weekend. Alex Cora, Red Sox manager, fired after they beat Baltimore 17-1.
Hilarious.
What? You couldn't have just waited another until like they lost a game?
It was funny, too, because they had multiple screens going Saturday. We're just watching TV, and on one of my screens they had going, they had Martin Lawrence's old show. Everybody knows how Martin gets down. He wants everybody out of his house. He's going to tell you, get the hell out of his house. And so right as one of those scenes was happening, it was right up like, wow, they fired the whole staff. Get out.
They basically cleaned house. After a 17-1 win, not a 17-1 loss, a 17-1 win, Cora is fired. Chad Tracy, former Major League player who was their AAA manager at Worcester, will take over on interim basis. Trevor Story comes out. He says it's kind of up in the air what the true direction of the franchise is. Says the explanation given to players wasn't satisfactory and wants to have further conversations with Chief Baseball Officer Craig Breslow about the firing. Things are not good in Boston right now. That's not. You don't want your players coming out after you fired the manager and basically, no, we need a better explanation.
We need a better explanation than that, man. What's wrong with y'all?
We're not buying this. Man.
We just won. That was 17-1. He couldn't buy another day.
Yeah, exactly. And then they won on Sunday as well. It has been a disastrous start for Boston, and it gets worse. You have to wonder if Carlos Mendoza might be here in the very near future. The Mets, of course, they had the 12-game losing streak. They end that. They win a couple of games. But then they just got swept by the Rockies. Getting swept by the Rockies is grounds for dismissal.
Yeah, that's rough.
That is grounds for dismissal.
This is not Larry Walker, Vinny Castillo, Colorado we're talking.
Yeah, no. Big Cat Galarraga is not walking through that door.
No Troy Tulowitzki, none of that action. This is like hard times.
No offense to Hunter Goodman.
No offense to our good friend Hunter Goodman.
But you get swept by the Rockies, fireable offense. And so that's 15 out of 17 that they've lost.
Ooh.
I just don't know how much longer Carlos Mendoza.
That's depressing.
Yeah, could possibly hold on to that Mets job. I don't know. We'll see. Paul Skeens flirted with a perfect game over the weekend, retired the first 20 batters he faced against the Brewers before giving up a hit. Remember back on opening day when he got rocked and his ERA was 67.5?
He was off the mound before I got home.
Yeah, now it's 2.48.
Oh, man. There we go. Things are looking normal again.
He's recovered quite well from that. And Connor Griffin, the young star, hit his first home run of his career on his 20th birthday. Some of those things, that's some of the things happening in Major League Baseball. The transfer portal. Still nothing new on three Tiger targets, Tylik Weeks, Cornelius Williams, Jaden Reed. Nothing new, no commitment, any direction from any of those guys. I don't know when they plan on making those said commitments. I don't know if they're still visiting other schools or not, but nothing new from any of those three.
I hope our callers heard you, because I will get a call at some point this afternoon. Hey, what's the update on the portal? I'm like, I have no clue.
And I mean, that it was radio silence from Munsley and those guys over the world. I kept waiting for that tweet or something, like one of them committed, either committed to Memphis or committed somewhere else. But no. And again, they may have been doing another visit over the weekend. Right. I don't know. Josh Holloway, according to a couple of different reports, and he had said he was going to be visiting this week. He is visiting Memphis today and tomorrow. Are these official visits anymore? Like, I don't even, like, is it just you and your agent sit down in an office for basically two days of money negotiations?
Right. Is there a tour that's included with this thing?
Here's the facility. Like, there's a facility. Yeah. Give me to the conference room. Put a piece of paper in front of me. Tell me how much money I'm making.
Right. I mean, there's all of that stuff that the general visit stuff happen after we get to the money, or how does this work?
If the money is even acceptable enough for me to stay, then we'll do the other stuff. But if you can't even get close enough, who cares? I don't care about the facility if you're not even close on money.
Right.
Couple of things from the American Conference. And these aren't Charlotte related. These aren't some guy that averaged 2 points a game going to Charlotte.
Even Brad Dacus got a kick out of that one last week.
God, Charlotte. We're like, Charlotte's, again, they got some kids from Cincinnati. That's great for Charlotte. Neither one of them showed they could play.
This is not Galen Young, Rodney White, Charlotte. Yeah, like Conference USA years.
Those two kids, they averaged 2 points per game. Let me see if they can play or not. Maybe they'll be great in the American. I don't know. But they averaged 2 points a game at Cincinnati. I'm not going to get that excited about it. North Texas gets Cash Davis. Great name. Not Crash Davis from Bull Durham.
Right.
Cash Davis from UT Arlington. He at least averaged 10.5 points and 3.5 assists last year.
Got a little cash.
He can play a little bit. We know that. We'll see what he is at North Texas. I don't know. But he did average double-digit points, 3.5 assists. Pretty good numbers at UT Arlington. UAB gets Deuce Jones. So the conference added a Cash and a Deuce.
Cash and a Deuce.
Like, you can't. That's just great. Deuce, what a great name for a basketball player.
And had SMU not left, we would have had a boopy too at one point.
St. Joe's transfer, Deuce Jones. He only played 10 games this year, but averaged 15.8 points. The year before, at LaSalle, he was the A-10's freshman of the year.
Play a little bit.
So he can play.
You got an accolade. You can play a little bit.
He can play. And UAB gets him. So, again, what else they have, we don't know. What Memphis ends up getting, we'll see. But those are two decent additions, two guys who actually have done something at the college level that are now in the American Athletic Conference. And, again, we still wait as far as Memphis is concerned. Meanwhile, Michigan, it just, like, they go get the 7-2 center from Cincinnati as – this is the Cincinnati kid who actually shows he can play. while Charlotte gets the Cincinnati kids who prove nothing, Michigan gets the 7-2 kid who shows he can play. Mustafa, I think they pronounce it Chim. It's T-H-I-E-M, but I think it's pronounced Chim. 7'2", and Michigan, obviously, looks like they're going to lose Mara. They're going to lose Johnson. But now they go add this. Michigan is... it's basically become Michigan, Duke, UConn. Who am I missing?
Florida still there.
Florida. There.
And I quietly what Jay Lucas is doing in Miami.
Okay, so So I went through, I used you could look at various rankings, mm-hmm. but the Field of 68, Jeff Goodman, his thing. They have their top 100 portal guys.
Okay.
And so I went
portal
through
players.
Yeah. The top 100 for this year, what they believe are the top 100 guys. Now you've got three of the top guys still undecided, and because all of them are going through the NBA draft as well. Right. You got Momchilovic, the great shooter from Iowa State. You got Yusofu, the kid from Baylor, the freshman.
Yeah.
And you've got Juke Harris out of Wake Forest. Those guys have not committed anywhere, but they're going through the draft process. So there's no guarantee they're going to be back in college. There's a lot of people that believe they will all come back to college, but we don't know that for sure yet. So you got three of those. But there are, of the 100 players right now, there are commitments. 54 different schools have secured a commitment, at least one commitment, out of their top 100. None of them schools reside outside of the Power Five. And using Big East as the fifth power conference school for basketball, all of those top 100 that are committed to Power Five schools.
Yeah.
No surprise. Again, where's the money? There it is.
That's where it is.
Tennessee leads the way.
Yeah.
Five of their top 100 are committed to Tennessee. Louisville and Indiana both have four of their top 100. You mentioned Miami. They've got three.
Right.
Providence has three.
Okay.
North Carolina has three.
Okay.
Arizona State, weirdly, with two. Maryland has three as well. Xavier with three. NC State with two. Villanova, two. West Virginia, two. UCLA, two. Texas Tech, two. Alabama, two. Creighton, two. Kentucky's got two. UConn's got two. Baylor's got two. USC's got two. Michigan has two. And then you go down the list of all these teams with one. But, I mean, Duke's only got one, but Duke's got some really good returning players. And they got some really good freshmen coming in.
It's just, they got a great balance of it with Duke.
Like, that's the thing. Like, some of these schools, while they're getting from the portal, they're actually still getting the top high school kids. And that's what Duke has obviously the last 2 years has had, you know, two of the best you could imagine on top of some of the other stuff. But there are in the power conferences in basketball, again, using the Big East as the fifth, there are 79 total teams. 54 of them have secured, again, according to the Field of 68, at least one top 100 transfer portal recruit. Again, this has nothing to do with high school kids, anything like that. Again, like Florida's only got one of these, but Florida's also got Condon coming back,
right.
Hauk coming back, Boogie Flan coming back, Denzel Aberdeen.
I'm saying he's the one that's in the portal.
We don't know that he's eligible, though.
Okay.
He has to get either a waiver or he needs the 5-5 to kick in. If that 5-5 kicks in for this year, then he's got another year of eligibility immediately.
But basically, they bring back a core that won a championship.
Yes. Like, I mean, that's like, so you look at it and go, oh, well, look, Florida's only got one of these. Well, no, it doesn't matter.
That's the one that won a championship.
They've got the studs. They got. And they might get Chinyelu back. There's a good chance they're going to get Chinyelu back. So they could return that entire front line that was unbelievable this year, along with Boogie Flan in the backcourt. So, I mean, again, you look at the rosters at Michigan, Florida, Duke. I mean, it's incredible. UConn.
And it's not – the money's definitely a factor there, but these guys are also master recruiters at bringing guys on campus and letting them selling them what they're going to do with them to put them in the best position to take them to that next level.
I'll be interested to see what Indiana's able to do getting four of these kids. Louisville, who was pretty darn good this past year, but they get four of them. Like, what's that? Obviously, Tennessee with five. Now, Tennessee's lost a lot of talent. Nate, there was still – I know some of their fans were holding on to the hope that maybe they were going to be able to keep Ament. They were going to be able to put together enough money that he would stay. He's not.
He's a lottery pick.
He officially declared he's gone. Obviously, they lost Estrella, who's going to Michigan. You know, they lost some talent. But five top 100 portal kids is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And so, again, Rick Barnes continues to do amazing stuff recruiting wise. It like blows my mind still. But you mentioned Jay Lucas. I think Jay Lucas at Miami. Oh, what he did this year, I think
he's the next one.
That is a program to watch out for.
Absolutely.
If they've got, we've always known Miami's got the people who will pay.
Yeah.
Hell, they did it before it was legal. They've always had people who will pay. They've started to care even more about basketball.
Yeah, because they tapped into the talent that they do get down in the South Florida area, you know. And as well as you get a great basketball mind, they can tap in with that generation of talent like a Jay Lucas, who's not far age-wise away from where these young men are. He can get them to come in and play for him, get them to sell the whole thing. Not much different than what John Shire's doing at Duke, and that's where Jay Lucas came from.
And a texter texts in and says, you know, Tennessee leads on Juke Harris if he doesn't go pro. Yeah, I believe with Harris, all the stuff I read, it's either Tennessee or Michigan, which I'm like, really? Michigan? Again, like, does Michigan need any more? Where do they, like, how much money could they possibly have left?
I would think that they got a good, you know, alumni base with some good paper, though. Like, much kind of like Indiana, we just don't know about them.
But Momchilovich, where did I see that his top? I think his was Kentucky, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was Momchilovich and Yusofu, I think, were both, like, there was the thought that maybe they would both end up at Kentucky. I'm trying to do it. I can't remember. I've read so much different stuff about all these. I know Harris definitely was Tennessee, and I'm almost positive Michigan was thought to be the other team in his final two.
Yeah.
The other two, I think Kentucky was but listed for both. And there were, I can't remember what the other ones listed for those were. Momchilovich shot 50% from three.
From three, yeah.
That dude is, he's only like a second round pick in the NBA. I would think he's definitely going back to school.
Mm-hmm.
And if any, you land a 50% 3-point shooter, that's, and the Yusofu kid is like, he was a top, I don't know, top 10 recruit, top 20 recruit going into Baylor. And he was really good this year. And obviously, Juke Harris averaged, 22 a game or something like that. The Tigers saw Yusofu and Juke Harris both this year when they played Baylor and they played Wake Forest. But, yeah, I suppose there are three massive fish possibly still to land. And, yes, if Tennessee lands Juke Harris on top of what they've already landed, again, I don't – maybe the worst thing I ever said, the most wrong probably I've ever been, was when Tennessee hired Rick Barnes. I laughed at that hire.
You didn't think it was a good hire?
I was like, they hired an old dude who doesn't care anymore. Like, he's done. He's just earning a check into retirement. Never thought in a million years he would possibly be able to recruit the way he has. It's incredible.
Got him in a refreshed situation. He got him back in a similar area where he was when he was in Clemson many years ago. And he just got renewed.
Yeah,
renewed. He's ready.
I was completely wrong about Rick Barnes.
He's put together some great teams and brought some really good talent.
I thought he would last about 2 or 3 years, and then be like, "Oh, he's not doing. He doesn't care." And then he would retire, and it would be off into the. And that's it's been the complete opposite of that.
I thought he would have gotten to a Final Four with Tennessee by now. I think he still will. It's knocking on the door. It's just a matter of time.
It's just hard, man. When you're at a program that's never been there, it's clearly hard, and you keep getting to the Elite Eight. Eventually, he's like, you're probably going to win one of those and get there. But no, he is done. An unbelievable job as far as I'm concerned. When we come back, we got to talk about the Nuggets Timberwolves and the situation at the end of the game the other night, and now the injuries for the Timberwolves, who have a 3-1 series lead. We'll do that when we come back. Do want to tell you about East Coast Wings and Grill, though. Great place to go watch these NBA playoffs. Great place to go watch some Major League Baseball. Just a great place to go. Go eat some delicious food. Wings, sandwiches, great burgers, salads, lunch specials daily, happy hour Monday through Friday, 3:30 to 6:30 with half-price draft beers, which is just an unbelievable deal. It is the best deal in town. Mondays, 85-cent wings all day long. Wednesdays, kids eat free. Every day now they got specials for different, depending on what your job might be. Every single day they're special. They got some other combo deals, specials going on right now. Just great place to go. Enjoy some delicious food and watch some games while they're on over at East Coast Wings and Grill. located just off Highway 64 in Bartlett, right there between Lowe's and Walmart at Wolf Chase, Kate Hyde Boulevard. That's the street that runs between the Lowe's and Walmart there. That's where you'll find East Coast Wings and Grill. Back with our final segment right after this on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Available locally on your radio dial as well as around the world online at sports56whbq.com. Take us with you everywhere by downloading the Sports 56 app. And at home, just say, Alexa, play Sports 56. Wherever you are, it's easy to stay tuned to Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Here's something you don't see every day. It's a full-on brawl at Family Leisure. Oh, yeah. There's a battle of the brands happening right now through May the 10th with seven different manufacturers all fighting it out for your business. Listen to this opening blow. Hot tubs starting at $34.99. Ouch! Then followed up with a mean right hook of swim spas starting at $16,999. That's a starting price. There are so many deals right now at Family Leisure, and the prices are just too low for me to even mention on the radio. One thing I can tell you, if you stop by Family Leisure and tell them you heard this on the radio, you're going to get a free cover lift with your spa purchase. But you better hurry in before all these great deals get knocked out. Technically, this is called the Hot Tub and Swim Spa Expo. But we're calling it the Battle of the Brands, happening now through May 10th at Family Leisure, Witten Road and I-40, where family and fun come together.
Men, if you're tired of relying on pills and want lasting, natural performance in the bedroom, Bluff City Health and Wellness offers Apex RF. Backed by clinical research, this discreet 15-minute, non-surgical treatment boosts blood flow, sensitivity, and confidence. No pills, no needles, no side effects. Appointments are filling fast. Call Bluff City Health and Wellness today at 901-800-7606 or take the ED quiz at bchwonline.com. Bluff City Health and Wellness, your confidence in the bedroom, natural.
Let me ask you something.
I bet it's Central Barbecue related.
It is Central Barbecue related.
Shoot.
You don't want me to ask you a Central Barbecue related question?
No, I mean shoot as in go ahead and ask.
Oh, you can be very confusing.
Ask your question.
Which one of Central Barbecue's sauces is your favorite?
That's a trick question because, you know, Central Barbecue's slogan is smoke is our sauce, so you don't really even need a sauce.
Other than smoke, what's your favorite sauce?
I can't do. I love them all. Mild, hot, mustard, vinegar, hot vinegar, sweet heat, all of them.
And that is how you make a Central Barbecue radio commercial.
Do you want a greener, more weed-free lawn? If you're like me, you can't stand the sight of dandelions, clover, or especially crabgrass. Hi, I'm Brandon Holly, president of Lawn Solutions. We are your locally owned and operated weed control and fertilization company. We are also experts in disease and insect control on your lawn and landscape. Our uniformed technicians are full-time, year-round licensed and certified by the state of Tennessee. Lawn Solutions' personalized service is far more superior to that of national companies that promise but simply cannot deliver. We return phone calls, we keep appointments, and we want your business. What we will not do is bother you with endless phone calls or junk mail. Lawn Solutions will not sell you something your lawn doesn't need. If you're looking for a local lawn care company to kill your weeds and feed your grass, then Lawn Solutions is the finest. Call us at 867-5626. That's 867-5626.
56 Mornings.
Good morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back here in the Family Leisure Studios. Eli and Jay with you. So we said going into the playoffs, we thought this first round, the Timberwolves-Nuggets series, probably the best, most interesting matchup. Well, I will say this, like, everybody keeps talking about this great rivalry. I never really thought of, like, Timberwolves-Nuggets as this great rivalry.
Nah, me neither.
Like, they've played in the postseason three of the last 4 years. And, like, that's, in the NBA, that's, like, what determines a rivalry. It's like the Grizzlies, every time they played somebody in the postseason, like, oh, that's their new rival. Well, they just played in the postseason. I don't know. Whatever. Like, everybody's like, oh, this is one of the great rivalries in the NBA. I'm like, Timberwolves-Nuggets? Really? Okay. But Saturday night, Timberwolves get the win, 112-96. They're up 3-1 in the series. We'll get to the injuries in a moment. But at the end of the game, we get Jaden McDaniels with a second left going and taking 2 points, getting a dunk, and Nikola Jokic went berserk. Flies up the court, grabs him. McDaniels doesn't back down. And we got almost an old-fashioned. It could have gotten ugly.
Could have gotten very ugly, but I'm glad it didn't.
Julius Randle got in there in a hurry.
That's a strong cat right
there. Yeah, him versus Jokic, that's a heavyweight battle right there. You got guys technically leaving the bench because it's happening over by the bench, all kinds of stuff. Randle and Jokic both ejected. Jokic fined $50,000, Randle $35,000. No suspensions handed out, as we said earlier. In the postseason, it better be something unbelievably egregious if you're going to suspend guys for games, and thankfully they did not hear. But what's your take on the whole scoring at the end of the game? And I should you do it? No. Is it reason to fly up court and try to kill somebody? No. Like, who cares? Why is that such an offensive thing to players? I don't get it.
I'm from the old school, the old country on it, and I understand it, but it's not a big deal to me. I mean, it's a layup. It's time winding down. It's not going to change the outcome, anything. I guess if you want to say, well, it's adding extra insult or showboating. Now, if Jalen went and he did a tomahawk dunk with it, it's got a showboat behind it. That still doesn't bother me. But I'll say this. If you're going to do it, be prepared for the pushback that some will come with it.
Exactly.
I don't agree with the pushback, but I understand how some people feel. Now, when we speak on the rivalry aspect of this with all of the talking that's been going on around it and the recent history of them, you know, meeting in the playoffs. Remember, they knocked the Nuggets out the year after the Nuggets won.
Yeah.
You know, so that kind of set that, you know, in the cement with the, as far as a rivalry goes. And for Jokic to feel that in his bones like that, you also got to go back to what was that game one or two where it was a late game situation where he and Ant, where, you know, with the basketball and whatnot, where it was a dead ball, he was trying to get the ball back from it, and like, you're not snatching the ball away from me. Just that little tedious stuff, like right there. But it's not a big deal.
Do you think it would have been different if it hadn't been Jaden McDaniels, who, of course, earlier in the series took the shots at Denver and talked about how bad they are all defensively?
I think if Mike Conley did it, it probably wouldn't have came off the same way.
No, Conley would never do it.
Conley would never do it.
Conley would never do that. Right. It's like Conley would never do
but
it.
If, but like, if AO would have did it, you know what I'm saying? I think he probably would have. I think Jokic was just pissed at that point.
Yeah.
Because they get broke down. They had a meltdown of a fourth quarter. We really found out what Jaden said was true. They can't guard these people.
They can't guard Elson. Dosunmu just can get. They can't keep him in front of them.
They can't guard any. I mean, it's just he can do whatever he wants to go. Get to his spots, the whole deal. But it's a lot of frustration on that Denver side right now that bled over into that.
Dosunmu,
but I don't have a problem with it, though.
Ayo Dosunmu, 43 points off the bench on 17 shot attempts.
Yeah.
We talk about SGA with his, and this 43, on 13 of 17 from the field, 5 for 5 from 3, which is crazy for him, and then 12 for 12 at the free throw line. As he, again, they can't guard him right now. They don't have anybody who can stay in front of him, and they just keep attacking Jokic. And he's like, it's they've figured out, like, that if you just keep attacking him defensively, he really doesn't have an answer.
They're making Denver play them on both ends of the floor and, like, really commit and lock in and play them. Like, you know, you're not going to beat us with your defensive scheme. Y'all got to check up.
Meanwhile, Jokic continues to be inefficient. He did have 24 points, 15 rebounds, 9 assists. Those numbers are good. But 8 of 22 from the field. He can't hit a three-pointer right now. He's from 3. It's a disaster. Murray, 30 points, but 10 of 25 shooting. So they were – it was – you know, they have to have both those guys be great because they're not getting much of anything from anybody else. Cam Johnson's got to be better. Like, Aaron Gordon played in this game. He's got to be better.
They have to bring the ones. It's like, this is a situation where, even like we said, where Jokic and Murray, they're not as efficient as they should be. But if these other guys were playing better, it would be a lot better on them. This is where your stars are your stars, but your role guys have to come up and step up and make that thing go for you to, you know, for them to preserve as a championship quality squad. But the way that Minnesota's guarding them, don't double. They're not doubling Jokic. They're staying home on everybody. That's the best way to play Denver.
Well, and it's nice to have Gobert to be able to do that. Now, for the Timberwolves, the bad news. Dante DiVincenzo tore his Achilles.
Yeah.
This has become the – how about, by the way, that
– all number zeros.
Yeah, DiVincenzo, Damian Lillard, Jason Tatum, Tyrese Halliburton, four guys who have torn their Achilles the last 2 years in the playoffs, all wear number zero.
Yeah.
That is bizarre as hell.
It was crazy.
Like that, like literally, that's one of those like Twilight Zone. Like, whoa, something. something's weird here. But DiVincenzo torn Achilles, so he's obviously done. And then Anthony Edwards. When it happened, I thought for sure it was a torn ACL because I just the way that thing hyperextended, I hate watching that. That's how I tore my ACL. It disgusts me when it happens. But it is not a torn ACL. However, it is a bone bruise, and he will miss multiple weeks.
Now he's got bad knees, plural.
Yeah. So now in this game, they still came back and won without DiVincenzo and without Edwards.
Masterful. For them to be able to mentally weather the storm of losing two guys in the manner that they did, especially with Dante, where you as soon as he went down, everybody knew. You know, it was one of those where to stay in the fight. Stay mentally into the fight. Go when they got to the half, it was like 54-50. I'm like, that's a good half for both teams, especially Minnesota, because they was able to weather that and then to continue on. AO just led the way.
So now the Nuggets tonight are an 11.5-point favorite at home. Again, you're without DiVincenzo. You're without Anthony Edwards.
I can understand why.
The question is this. Certainly at Denver tonight, you'd expect the Nuggets, like they'd have to win this game.
Yeah.
Can Minnesota, without those two guys, can they win one of these next three?
They can. They really, I don't know how viable it is, but the way they're defending is really telling the tale for them.
Because two of them are at Denver. One of them at home.
And they were able to get one of them in Denver already.
What's the series odds, by the way? Do you know, is Minnesota even favored in the series right now? Or is Denver's favored in the series?
I think Denver's still favored even down 3-1.
I mean, it's just with those two guys out, again, they just won that game.
I mean, DiVincenzo is one thing because that's your point guard. He was playing great the whole deal. But Ant is that star that you're going to need.
Minnesota is a -158. You can get Denver at +134 if you think. But that's down 3-1. That's insane odds. Yeah. Normally you would be like +700.
Right.
They're +134 because of the situation. I saw somebody post on Twitter the other day, like, if you were Minnesota, would you rather be 2-2 but have both those guys or up 3-1 without those two guys?
That's a good question. I'm still going up 3-1. Let's roll. You can't beat three games with one more to win to advance, especially if you can get rid of that big dude that's on the other side.
Yeah, that'll be man, that's going to be interesting to see
and
how
you
that
still
series
get
goes.
One of them coming back to the target center,
yeah,
too. So.
Yeah, that'll be crazy. Didn't even get into some of these other stuff. Like the Raptors-Cleveland game yesterday, my goodness gracious, what in the hell was that?
That was one of those games where about midway through the second quarter, I did a lot of live bets, and my live bet focused on rebounds. Because there was a lot of misses.
4 of 30 from three-point range, and they won the game.
Yeah, they played great defense, though, Eli. As a crew, individually, they were able to muddy that up, keep it in line, and they were able to find the win.
That game, that series 2-2, Knicks-Hawks 2-2. And Thunder up 3-0. Magic's up 2-1. Tonight, you got Detroit at Orlando. Detroit, again, trying to even that series up. Otherwise, they're in trouble as the number one seed. Oklahoma City trying to wrap it up against Phoenix. And then the Timberwolves at the Nuggets. Timberwolves trying to wrap it up. But they've got the battle on their hands there without the injuries. Without Anthony Edwards and without Dante DiVincenzo. That's going to do it for today's program. Thank you to Matt Reiser for joining us as he does each and every Monday. Greg makes his return tomorrow. We'll be talking about the NBA playoffs and much, much more. Maybe we'll get some commitments today for the Tigers. Who knows? We'll see what happens. We'll have it all for you tomorrow morning right here at 7 a.m. Wolo and Friends coming up next here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Have yourselves a great Monday. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on